Hey everybody, it's so wonderful to see everybody here, see some regular faces from the OU Shir, and to see some regular faces from the Beit Knesset Anasim Shir. It's like, I feel like I'm at a chasna, and that a beloved chasna and a beloved kalah have met each other, and I'm related to both sides. It's a nice feeling, and therefore I wish both the OU Israel Center and Beit Knesset Anasi really a lot of hatzlacha with this amazing new venture. It's a little bit difficult at first to work out how many people are going to be here. I apologize if not everybody has a source sheet. Next week we'll make a few more. I hope you come back. So if you come back, you'll have a source sheet hopefully next week. And I hope you found a parking space as well. We all need a brocha of Kibitza Sadera to find a parking space. So I'd like to start with a few...
Excuse me, Rabbi, is this a regular time now?
No, okay, good. I'm very pleased you asked that. That's the first Shiloh of the day. I will in a second, Miriam. Yes, that's the second Shiloh of the day. This year should start at 10:15, okay? And it should be... And normally we don't want it to be Jewish time, we want it to be actual time. I will do what I can to make sure this year starts at 10:15. Today was a little bit late. I apologize, we're just getting going. But it will be hopefully a 10:15 start from next week. And the other thing I wanted to say is if you could please remember to turn off your phones, like I often say, and the person who hasn't turned off your phone, if you could turn off your phone as well, please, that would be amazing. And also to thank our sponsors. We have a sponsorship today that the Shirim today are sponsored by Sharon and Michael Kronenberg, Le'ilu Nishmas Sharon's father, Harav David Yitzchak Ben Harav Shimon Mordechai Bernstein, whose yahrzeit is on the 6th of Elul. So, here we are, a new start, a new series. We've been doing this Shir Baruch Hashem linked with the OU since 2016. I called the Shirim from 2016 through to the end of COVID series one, around about the end of COVID in 2021, whatever you think the end was. We started what I called series two, which were mostly new Shirim, but a little bit updated versions of some of the other ones. So I felt today really should be the start of series three. So it doesn't mean we're going to be repeating. In fact, today's shir is a shir that I've never given before in this format. And we'll talk a little bit about what I'd like to speak about over the next few weeks. But please God, we'll start a new series. I'm very happy to hear suggestions, ideas. Is this meant to be recording, by the way? I don't know. I'll press record. Oh, it doesn't seem to be working. Okay, fine. You know, it's what it is. I hope to be able to give a whole bunch of new shirim, please God, in this series too, and we'll move forward from there. Okay, so I took quite a long time thinking about what would be a good thing to speak about. It's very difficult. There's lots of different sort of tensions I feel in my mind. On the one hand, not to address something which speaks to where we're at today in our very specific circumstance seems tone-deaf. Just to speak about something completely unrelated. I know there's lots of amazing shirim we can talk about for Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, etc. On the other hand, to speak only about... Thank you very much, Sam. Thank you. Without Sam, we wouldn't be technologically here. Thank you, Sam. To speak about something totally related to the Matzav, I feel that ignores our responsibility to talk Torah in a more general sense. There's lots of topics we need to speak about. So I wanted to try and find something which was a convergence of those two things. And I decided to do the following. For the next four or five shiurim, which will take us through to the Chagim, just after the Chagim, I'd like to talk about a topic which I've always shied away from speaking about, really anywhere, which is the issue of tzaddik v'ralo. What are the traditional Jewish approaches to this classic question of why awful things happen to people who are innocent or certainly undeserving, as far as we can see, of the things that have happened to them. The issue of tzaddik v'ralo, and the issue also of Rasha v'tovlo, although we're less bothered by that. Although we'll see the Rishonim were also bothered about why do good things happen to bad people. Because sometimes it's easier to see who's a bad person than who's a good person. And if good things happen to bad people, that's also a challenge on some level. But we're really more focused on tzaddik v'ralo, or in more philosophical sense terms, the problem of evil. And I think as many of us move towards Rosh Hashanah, that is something on our minds, it's something we're grappling with. And I'll let you know in advance, there'll be no easy answers, there'll be no glib responses, there'll be no, well, obviously the answer is X, clearly not. But that doesn't invalidate the question. This is a question that we as Jews have been asking since the Tanakh, the whole of Sefer Iyov, is addressed to that. And we won't be learning the book of Job in depth. We can't in the Shilis, and this is not the series on Iyov, although there are many, many good resources online. But we've been asking this question for a long time, and therefore, even to address the question and to explore the answers, some may speak more to you than others, but I think that's legitimate. And I must say that this is a question we kind of made for ourselves. When I say this is an old question, it's not an ancient question, because in the pagan world, before we came along and introduced monotheism, nobody really had a problem of tzaddik v'ra'lo. Because the world is random. There are capricious gods just baiting people for their own fun. Why try and make any sense out of anything? It's not meant to make sense. Nothing makes sense. And therefore, if nothing makes sense, then why be surprised when anything happens to anybody? It's only when we came along and said, no, there is a concept of monotheism. There is one overarching God who is responsible and involved in the world, a God that we call an omniscient, an all-knowing God, an omnipotent, an all-powerful God, and an omnibenevolent God, a God that loves us, and this is stated many, many times throughout Tanakh, that God is a God that loves the world. If you have this all-knowing, all-powerful, and all-loving God, and yet this terrible suffering happens to innocent people, this gives us a lot of sleepless nights. Now, of course, there are different ways of addressing this issue. You can try and knock out any one of those things. You could turn around and say, well, God would deal with it, but he doesn't know everything that's going on. God really isn't as omniscient as you think, and we'll talk about that more today. Or you could turn around and say, well, God knows what's going on, but for more complex reasons than we thought at first, God isn't able to, we'll have to see what that means, intervene, because there are certain ground rules which have been set up. We can talk about free will, etc. So maybe our understanding of omnipotence is not what it should have been. Or maybe we can say, yes, God is an omnibenevolent God, but benevolence is more complicated than you think. There are bigger agendas, there's Olam Haba, etc., etc., and we're not seeing the whole picture. We're only, by definition, seeing one part of it. So there are different ways of addressing the question. And then, of course, there's the whole important approach, which is, this is not something we want to even try and do. This issue of theodicy, which is, theodicy is just the fancy word for trying to explain why God acts like God acts, maybe that itself is on some level an offensive approach. And we'll see this is also a valid Jewish approach, an anti-theodicy approach. We shouldn't be trying to work this out. We should be reacting and building and responding and not spending so much time trying to think of why questions. We'll see Rabbi Sachs is very strong on that approach, and Rav Soloveitchik, who he picks up on. I remember there's one of the most emotional videos I remember seeing, Rabbi Sachs, who was interviewed very shortly before he died and asked a question on the problem of evil. The video went around and around and around, and you could see in his eyes that he knew he didn't have long for the world. And his response was a very, very powerful one, which we will get to, but not today. Okay, so this is what I'd like to talk about over the next few weeks. And right now, before Rosh Hashanah, there's lots of Hilchos Tshuva that comes into this. So I hope you find that this is a useful topic, an interesting topic, something which is relevant also for the time of year, and it will expand our understanding. So let's dive in. If you have a sheet, if you don't have a sheet today, it's not the end of the world. It's actually, by my standards, a pretty short sheet. Look at this, only 3 pages. When did you last have experienced that? And I'm going to try not to overwhelm you or to go too quickly. Let's start with vidui. Vidui that we say in Yom Kippur. One of the vidui that we say is al chet shechatanu lefanecha betim hom leivav. We have a very confused mind. Tim hom leivav. And this is taken from the Tochacha. If you look in Dvarim, number 2, where the Tochacha in Dvarim includes, we're going to read it in a couple of weeks, Yakecha Hashem, God will afflict us, God forbid, with shigayon, with craziness, bi'ivaron, with blindness, ubetim hom levav, and with a sense of confusion, with a sense of, Rashi translated as oitem halev, our minds are foggy, like brain fog. Otem is something is blocked up. And then he gives an old French word, estourdissement, which is a modern French word, étourdissement, which is dizziness, craziness, a sense that we don't understand what's going on. And by the way, I didn't mention this, but you know, today is especially important to address this issue, because not only we're now, of course, overwhelmed by the sorrows that we've had over the last year and still dealing with that, but today is also September the 11th. And I just thought of that as I was coming in, which is a day that all of us remember as a day where we were challenged with these enormous questions as well. And this sense of confusion is, we'll see where this comes in terms of our beliefs and in terms of Emunah right now. By the way, I brought you in the footnote that Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, and I very strongly recommend you look at this, he has a whole piece on Timhon Leva, which I gave you a reference for in one of his Sforim here. Which one is it in? It's in Return or Renewal Reflections on Tshuva and Spiritual Growth, one of the Magid Sforim that was brought out recently. And he says there that it goes both ways. When we clap al chait, for Timhon Levav, he says for some people it's that they doubted too much, they were too confused, and for some people it's that they didn't doubt enough. Very interesting. And he says the modern Orthodox community is very challenged, however you want to define centrist modern Orthodox, with sometimes doubting too much, questioning too much cynicism, too much skepticism. And that's the chait of Timhon Levav. And then he says the Haredi community is sometimes, if you like, blameworthy for all its wonderful aspects within it of not enough self-analysis, not enough questioning, too much confidence, without enough self-criticism. And he goes through, and he's in his own way, he's, you know, critical, but in a very positive way of both. But I recommend you look at that piece of Rav Aaron. But therefore, we can't have too much confusion. It is a chet. We don't want to be confused on issues where we can't afford to be confused. And let's pick this up in the Rambam, in number 3. The Rambam, at the beginning of the Perek Gimel, says as follows. We believe in zchuyot, v'avonot. There are certain sins that we do, there are certain, I mean, sin is a very Catholic word, averas, whatever, certain merits that we have. Kol echad v'echad b'bnei ha'adam yesh lo zchuyot v'avonot. Everybody has the positives and negatives. Mishe zchuyot yitzei ra'alav v'matat tzadik. Someone who is on balance in the positive side, he's a tzadik or she's a tzadik. Now, tzadik doesn't mean a perfect individual. This person is 50.5%. But their individual persona is connected with being roiv. The majority is a tzaddik. It's how they identify holistically. Someone who has negative in the majority is a rasha. And someone who's exactly in the middle is a beinoni. And I'm not getting into this now, this is a whole different shir, but who's even a beinoni? If the judgment on merits and demerits is carried out by HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the most infinite way, to infinite decimal places, then by definition there can't be anybody that's 50%. Everybody has to be a little bit more or a little bit less. So what is this Beinoni? And it's not just we don't know what you are, it's we know what you are. You're a Beinoni, and if you look at the commentaries here, they say these are states of mind. Some people are existentially Beinonim. I can't commit, I don't know who I am. Sometimes I feel like I want to be a tzaddik, and sometimes I feel like I want to be a rasha. I'm just in limbo, which is not in the Catholic limbo, but in the, you know, limbo. So he says there are these different groups of people. Fine. And then go down to hay in the middle. But he rubim, anyone who is a rasha, who has majority negatives, they get judged. But they still have olam haba. They still have a spiritual reality. Every Jew has the spiritual reality. Even though they sin. But then, of course, is the rav, which is that these are the people who don't have a chelik in olam haba. They are judged forever and ever and ever and ever. And the olam liyomi olamim. I mean, he says it in the best, most expansive way he can. And these are they. Who are they? Haminim, the happy korsim. And then he gives a whole list of different kinds of heretics. People who deny Torah, people who deny resurrection, and Mashiach. And I'm not going to go through the whole list. But I'm interested in who is an happy korsim. And actually, this scans very well with the Rambam's 13 Ikarim. If you go through the 13 Ikarim, he explains the minim are basically the people who deny the first five of the Ikarim. They say there is no God, or God is not one, or God has physical shape, etc. The Apikorosim are a different group. And here's one that I want to focus on. The last line of number three, Shloisha Heinikram Apikorosim. There are three specific types of people who are Apikorosim, as opposed to minim. Ha'aymer, someone who says, She'ena bar yodeya masa b'nei adam. Someone who says, I don't believe God really knows what's going on. God is not omniscient. Apikoros. No place in Olam Haba. Okay, that sounds quite serious. I mean, what if a person has doubts about what God knows? What if there are different opinions on what God knows? Is everyone going to be an apikoros? And I'm not getting into the exact distinctions between a means, one kind of heretic and another. I heard a story once from one of the grandsons of Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky. Rabbi Yaakov once gave a speech which was perceived as being too Zionistic for people's particular flavor. And he went to daven the next morning in a certain minyan, and they wouldn't count him in a minyan. And he said, why won't you count me in a minyan? So they said, you're napikolos, you're tzioni. He said, you know something, I'm not going to argue with you. And he went and davened on his own. And he came after, he says, but by the way, if you look carefully, you'll see that according to you, I'm not an apikoros, I'm a min. It's a different kind of heretic. At least if you're going to call me a heretic, get your heresy right. Okay? Don't ever accuse some of the people doing the wrong kind of heretic. Okay? Fine. I heard that from one of the grandchildren. So we've got to get this right, what God knows and what God doesn't know. We can't afford to get this wrong. Meaning, it sounds like it's more dangerous than, you know, you break Shabbos, God forbid, you eat treif, whatever. Okay, you could be a Rashi, even 70, 80% bad. You have a chelek in Olam Haba, you do tshuva, but you have apikoros. You can always do tshuva for being an apikoros as well, but the stakes are higher. So let's have a look. Let's just briefly review this particular Ikar of Emunah in number 4. What is the 10th Ikar of God's omniscience? Says the Rambam, relatively straightforward, or so it seems. Hey, so Daisili, the 10th Ikar. The God knows all the actions of people. He doesn't abandon them, the world. He knows their actions. He doesn't actually say their thoughts here, but let's assume that it means that God knows every single thing that's going on in the human world and in the general world. But like that, Misha, Amar, not like the view that you see represented when Yechezkel talks about different kinds of heretics. He says, some of them say, Azav Hashem et Haaretz. God has abandoned the world. It's like what they call a deistic approach. That God created everything originally, wound up the system, and has basically gone off to do whatever God does for all eternity, and it's just playing like a clockwork thing. He's not involved. He doesn't know. He doesn't care. Because he's the senior manager. Why would the senior manager care? I mean, Lahavdil, you know, imagine Jeff Bezos, who's the, you know, very rich fellow, and he's the head of Amazon. There are people putting paper in the photocopying machines in the Amazon office in, you know, in North Dakota, in Fargo, North Dakota, which I'm not convinced even exists as a place. I've never met anyone who's even been there. But okay, let's set conspiracy theories aside. Okay? So he doesn't care who they are. He employs people to employ people to employ people to employ people to work out who's putting the paper in. Jeff Bezos doesn't know and he doesn't care. So it's a bit like that. Those heretics say God is too important. Ella, rather, we believe, Kamosha Amar, Gogolates of Ravali Rasha, Inechapukuchot, Al Kol Darche B'nei Adam, says, Yumiyahu, no, your eyes are open on every single thing. And then he brings two classic texts, proof texts from the Chumash. The Amaz, it says, Vayarashem, Ki Rabba Rat Haaretz, Ha'adam Baaretz. He sees that the flood, the generation of the flood, are acting in an evil way. God cares, God sees, and God cares. The Aman, it says, all with Snom, Zakat Snom, Vamaraki Rabba. And he sees that Snom is also evil and acting in that way, and he intervenes. This is the 10th Ikar. It, again, sounds relatively straightforward. God knows everything that's going on. Okay? This obviously gives us a major challenge, which is as follows. There are a few challenges to God's omniscience. Number one. Did this just suddenly go quieter? No, maybe it's just my imagination. There are four basic challenges. What about mazel? We talked about this before, and I'm not going to get into it in detail, certainly not today. But are there people who just things happen to them because they've got bad mazel? They're born into a certain reality. We might even call this today genetic reality. Your mazel, you were born the minute you were conceived, you had certain fixed parameters to your existence, and you can't go beyond those. There's nothing you can do. And again, we're not going to have a shir on Mazel. We've talked about it before. Yesh Mazel b'Yisrael, Ein Mazel b'Yisrael. But how does that deal with, okay, God knows, but there's nothing that can be done, and you're kind of fixed in. You don't really have free will because you have that Mazel. Also, there's an issue of free will, which is nature and nurture, which is we're brought up in a certain way. We think we have free will, but really we don't have free will. And here's the key thing for omniscience. How can I have free will when God knows everything that's going on? If God knows everything that I'm about to do, this is not me that just thought of this question, it's an obvious question. How could I possibly have free will? How could I have ever done anything differently to what God knew was going to happen? And if God is all-powerful, how can I possibly exercise free will in any way that goes against God's omnipotence? That's a second question, another question on free will. Now, the question on God's power is less of an issue, maybe. Some people think it's more of an issue, but we're going to say it's less of an issue. Because you could say what the Rambam basically said, which is, yes, God obviously has the power to override free will, but God has, if you like, pulled back from that power. God has delegated free will to human beings, because in the grand scheme of things, that's what God wants to do. Someone who has absolute power can always delegate an element of that power to someone else. And therefore, it's not a major philosophical crisis that God is, if you like, withdrawn. If you want to get Kabbalistic, you can talk about Tzimtzum, that God, if you like, has withdrawn his presence from this world to give a space for free will, that we have that free will. And we can talk about whether that Tzimtzum is real, meaning we really do have free will, or it's just virtual, we just think we have free will. But the power issue is not a major one. But there are other issues which are major as well, and I've listed some here as well. As I mentioned, the theological challenge that free will is inconsistent, so it seems, with God's knowledge. How could I possibly exercise free will if God knows already what I'm going to do? The scientific challenge, which I'm not going to get into today, that's not my area of expertise, but many scientists in the world feel the world is determined. There are causes, cause and effects. We live in a world of causation where one thing inevitably leads to the other. Okay, it's very complicated. But if you just understood the causation well enough, if you had the most unbelievable supercomputer that could do that, then you would understand why you made those choices. You think they're free, but they're not free, because someone in your exact situation is always going to make that choice. It's a determined universe. Many scientists feel that free will is just an illusion. You just don't realize how complicated the causes are. It's not as straightforward, by the way, because, again, I'm not a scientist. I don't like speaking about things that I don't understand. But I am a lawyer, so I often speak about things that I don't understand, because that's what lawyers do. In a world of quantum uncertainty, there is an interesting question as to whether things are actually as determined as you really think. On a quantum level, there is built into the system an uncertainty which perhaps cuts against that feeling of determinism. We feel that on a larger scale, there's a causation. Things lead to other things. But on this micro-nano scale, maybe there's a quantum uncertainty. I don't know if that necessarily helps, because if everything is on a certain level random through quantum uncertainty, then what's my free will either? That's also just a quantum randomness too. But there is a scientific discussion about that. So how do we deal with this? Let's, again, we're not going to get too into the weeds of philosophy, but God's omniscience versus my free will. This is very important. So how do I deal with this? So there are three ways, basically. You can either say, you know something? You don't have free will. You just think you do. That's called determinism. It's an illusion. You don't have free will. Or you can say, you do have free will, but God doesn't know everything that's going on. We'll see in a minute how that works. That's sometimes called libertarianism. Not in the political sense of libertarianism, but in this sense that you do have freedom and God doesn't know. Or you can go down the route that most of the classic Jewish sources do, which is called compatibilism. They somehow go together. It might not be obvious at first, but yes, you do have free will. And yes, God does know everything. But they can live with each other in some way. And again, this is not just a random or theoretical discussion. This, as the Rambam just told us, we have to get our heads straight on this, or we're apocorsim, we don't want to be. And also understanding this issue of tzadik v'ralo, understanding God's knowledge and understanding is absolutely fundamental as well. So let's look at some of these approaches. There's also like an almost innate sense of intuition that we have free will. We feel that we're free. And Rav Sadia Gaon flags this, and he says, we feel that we have choices. You can't ignore that very real feeling. And also there's the issue of consciousness. What is it actually going on in my brain? All the scientists in the world have not yet worked out what consciousness is. And they don't, I think, from what I've read, even know exactly how they're going to work out what consciousness is. We're aware of ourselves. And that self-awareness may actually be the answer to the question, because that may exist in a spiritual realm, which, of course, goes beyond the scientific question. So let's have a look at some sources. As I said to you before, most of our sources are classically described as compatibilist. And perhaps the most obvious expression of this is, just go over to page 3, look at the very short source in number 8. We'll come back to 6 and 7, but just look at number 8. This is Pirkei Avot. Pirkei Avot says, Hakol Tzafui, everything is foreseen. Sofim, to look, everything is seen. V'harushut Netuna, but free will is given. It's Rabbi Akiva's opinion. It doesn't explain how they live together, but it's a classic compatibilist approach. God knows, and he knew before you did it what you were going to do, but you still had a free choice. How does that work? We'll see. The Rambam is going to give us some ideas. Let's look quickly at number 6. The Rambam says as follows, and this is also from Hilchos Tshuva, one of the reasons I wanted to bring this today. We need to recap on these Tshuva ideas. Rishut lekol adam netuna. Every single person has free will, says the Rambam. Imrata lahatos atzmo lederek tova v'liyot tzadik karushus b'yado. If you want to be a tzadik, and again, tzadik doesn't mean the holiest individual you can imagine. It means someone who is 50% plus in the good. You can be that. Imrata lahatos atzmo lederek ra. If you want to choose bad things, liyos rasha. You want to be a rasha. Rishus b'yado. It's up to you. You know, God is not condescending in Judaism. God says, you know something, I'm giving you some choices. I'm not going to save you against your will. That's other religions. Yeah, you make a choice. You want to be a tzaddik, you want to be a rosh, it's your life. You be a grown-up, you make that choice. But you can make that choice. For who should cast up a Torah, and this is what it says in the Torah. Hey, now Adam Hayakeh b'meno l'das tovarah. He goes right to the very beginning with the Garden of Eden. God says, now that they've eaten from the tree of knowledge, they are able to make this decision between good and bad. And again, we could have 3 whole shirim on what exactly happened in the Garden of Eden when they ate from that fruit. And the Rambam has his own approach, and there are Kabbalistic approach. I'm not going there. That's a whole series of shirim. And there are books, many great books, which are written. Rabbi Tatz has a good book on free will and determinism and goes into this. Also, Rav Nathanael Wiedeblank, I think that's his name, has an excellent book on this as well, which I recommend strongly. But we're not going to go there. So, Bet, he says, Al yar baba machshavtecha, don't put into your head the fools of the world and v'roiv galmei bnei Yisrael, and most of the goylems, goylmim, most of the, I don't know, when I was a kid, they used to call me a galem all the time. That's what people did. That was education in those days, you know? You know, a galem, like this galem. There are lots of goylmim around. There are lots of people who are undeveloped. They think this. They think God has determined what you're going to be. Ain't a davar kein. It's not true. You can be a tzaddik like Moshe Rabbeinu. Interesting. You might not be able to be a prophet like Moshe Rabbeinu, but you can be a tzaddik like Moshe Rabbeinu if you want to be. Or Rosh Kiravam, or you can be wicked like Yeravam, or Chacham, or Sachal, or Rachman, or Achsari, or Kili, or Shua. You can be a spendthrift, you can be a miser, you can be Vachen Shah Koladeus, and all of these things. You have a choice. Now again, it's not so simple. And the Rambam in Hilchos Deus says that's all very well that you have a choice, but everybody's different, and therefore their choice is very delimited by their upbringing, and there is a very strong element of nature and nurture. For some people, the choice will be very straightforward. Oh, I'm not going to get angry. Why should I? For other people, it's excruciatingly difficult because they're built with a sense of, you know, verkocht all the time. So he says, okay, nobody has the same Yetzirah as anybody else. But in principle, everybody has a choice. And by the way, once you don't have a choice, someone, God forbid, sticks a gun to your head, or somebody is mentally incapacitated, so then you're not responsible in halacha. And therefore it follows through. Fine. Gimel. V'davazeh ikar gadolhu. This is a very important ikar, a very important principle. V'hu amad ha-Torah v'ha-mitzvah. This is the foundation of all Torah mitzvah. Shnei emar, ein nesati levanecha hayom etzachayim. I'm giving you a choice. Pick life, pick death, etc., etc. The parshas we're going to read. V'ksivah, again, re'a nochi noten lefnechem hayom. It's in your hand. This is a very important ikar. And by the way, we have to ask ourselves, well, you know, Rabbeinu Moshe, this is a very important ikar. Why didn't you include it in the 13 ikarim? Some people say, oh, it's the 14th Ikar. Well, what does that mean? He made 13. He didn't put it in the list. So there are reasons you could say it is in the list. Maybe it's in creation, but I'm not going to get there. That's a very important discussion. You can do whatever you choose to do. And that's why it says, an amazing pasuk we read a few weeks ago, it says, when Moshe Rabbeinu goes over the giving of the Torah at Sinai, and he says, the Jewish people said to him, you know something, we've heard enough. You go up the mountain, we'll stand back, we're happy for you to do the rest, it's too scary. And God responds, oh, if only they were always like this. What do you mean, if only? You're God. What are you saying, halavai? Does God say halavai? Yes, explicitly. And the Rambam says God has taken himself back and he's left it to us. Kolama she'ena bari kof b'nei adam, lo goze alein la'asas toiva, alright, etc., etc. And then he says, if God had told us that we were going to be a tzaddik and made us be a tzaddik for Russia, what's the whole purpose of Torah? The whole purpose of Torah is to give us choices. If we have no choices, it's all a sadistic game. It can't be. Apart from the explicit psukim, the explicit verses that say we have free choice, there'd be no meaning or relevance to the whole thing. And there are all the statements in Chazal as well that the Rambam brings in other places, like number 7, Rabbi Hanina says, "Akol bidei shamayim, God controls all things, chutz miyirat shamayim, except from your choice to be a good person, to be a bad person, etc., etc." Okay, fine. Good. We have free choices, the Rambam, absolutely. But everything is foreseen. How so? So let's look at what I think is a very interesting source in number 9. Says the Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva, later on in that same chapter. And by the way, the Zohar says something interesting. It's similar to the Rambam. It's not always that the Rambam disagrees on principle with everything that's Kabbalistic, and there are overlaps too. Number 9. Shema Taima, you might turn around and say, God knows everything that's going to be before it is. Yadash is a tzaddik or rosha. He knows if you're a tzaddik or a rosha. You're going to choose the tray food or the kosher food. Or maybe he doesn't know. You're going to tell me he doesn't know. Ve'in yadash hu yeh tzaddik. If he knows you're going to be a tzaddik, yadash shelo yeh tzaddik. It's not possible for you to not be a tzaddik. Ve'in taima, and if you want to try and claim, sheyadash yeh tzaddik. God thinks you're going to be a tzaddik and pick the kosher food. But at the last minute, you're going to just switch to the tray food. Ah, you didn't expect that. He says, that's just silly. Hello, Yadad Avalbari. You're just saying God didn't know. You can't fudge it, he says. How are you going to say that you have freedom if God knows? Duh. He says, you should know the following. Third line, number 9. It's a very complicated answer. There is an answer, he says. But it's very complicated. You have to think. The Kama Ikrim Gidoyim Maharim Ramin Tulim Ban, so many very important principles depend on this. Listen to what I'm about to tell you. And by the way, this is right in the center of Hilchos Tshuva, which is an interesting position. There are whole books written on the structure of the Mishnah Torah, how he sets things out, and all sorts of fascinating theories as to why he sets them out. There are 10 chapters in Hilchos Tshuva in the Rambam. This is in the Halacha 5 of chapter 5. It's right in the middle. So in a sense, this is the center of the chiasm. It's right in the middle. So he says, listen to what I'm going to tell you. Kfar be'einu l'perik sheni v'hilchos yisodi ha-Torah. We've already explained earlier on, he said, in the fundamentals of Torah in the earlier parts of Sefer Mada. She'akodesh baruch hu eini yodea b'da'as shehi chutz mimen. B'da'as shehi chutz mimen. God doesn't know in a way that is external to him. K'bnei Adam, like you know, Shehein v'das and Shnayim. You, me, and our knowledge are two different things. Meaning, I'm Anthony Manning, I'm 55 years old. When I was 5 years old, there were many things that I did not know. But I was still me. I existed independent of that knowledge. And in 500 years from now, if I decide to write my thoughts and memoirs in a book and anyone still wants to read it, they will know what I thought way back in the day, in the 21st century. And even when I don't exist physically, my knowledge will continue to exist. It's independent. We are two different things, but not God. Elohim brashmo v'da'ato echad. God and everything God knows is the same thing. V'ein da'ato shel ha'adam yichol la'hasik davar zeh al bario. You can't get your head around that. That God's knowledge is God. It's not separate in any way. We can't get our head around that. U'kashem she'ein koch ba'adam la'hasik v'nisona amitet al bario. Just like you can't get your head around the essence of God. What is God's essence? Really, are you asking me that question? I as a finite human being, should know God's essence. And I bring you proof, he says. Shinema ki lo yira ani hadam b'chai. Moshe, at the highest points of Har Sinai, at the highest moment, the moment of most intimacy between Moshe and God, on the top when he gets forgiveness for the Jewish people, so he says, God, show me your essence. Hareini na et kvodecha. And God says, that'd be ridiculous. You can't, even you, can't understand anything of my essence. V'kach, say so too, ein kayach ba'adam la'asig limsoi data shalavar. So you can't understand God's knowledge. God's knowledge is God. It's the same thing. It's God's essence. If you can't understand God's essence, you can't understand God's knowledge. Why are you even trying? It's a ridiculous question. And that's why Yeshaya says, your thoughts are not my thoughts. Now, we normally read this on a fast day, and we think, no, it means, and it does mean that we don't run the world. God runs the world, you don't get the whole picture. But the Rambam's reading this very literally. No, your thoughts are not my thoughts. Whatever you think you know about how God knows anything, you're just fooling yourself. It's just like, you know, a dog howling at the moon. I once had this sort of feeling. It's not particularly deep, but I was davening mincha once in Maarat HaMachpelah. Maybe your mind goes into different directions when you're davening at Maarat HaMachpelah. And as I was davening in a little area outside, a little pigeon landed on my shtender. And it looked at me, and I looked at it, and it did, you know, the pigeon thing. And I sort of did the davening thing. I felt there was a lot of symmetry between us. We were both doing this. And I thought to myself, this pigeon is looking at me, has eyes, it has ears, has a brain. But it, whatever it thinks it knows about what I'm doing here, it's completely not true. It doesn't have any way of understanding the reality of what it actually finds itself in. And then I suddenly thought to myself, maybe I'm just a pigeon on somebody else's shtender. Looking around, doing my thing, thinking that I see everything and understand everything, but I understand nothing. I just have such a limited understanding. So that's what it is. That's how it works. And you can't understand. But then he says, but know this, God does know everything, and you do have a choice, and nothing makes you be at Tzaddik or at Rosh, you can choose, etc., etc. Now, very nice. Thank you for that amazing, deep response to this question. But the question remains, did the Rambam answer the question? Now, some Mefarshim say, yes, he did answer the question. He told us that there is a different kind of knowledge, which is God's knowledge. And it's a different kind of knowledge. So the answer to your question is, there are different kinds of knowledge, and you have this knowledge, and God has this knowledge. But most people say that the Rambam didn't answer the question. Because he doesn't need to answer the question. Because it's a ridiculous question. It's like me picking somebody at random and saying, just answer yes or no. Did your brother get out of jail yet? Just a yes or no. What are they going to say? Let's say they don't have a brother. Let's say they never had a brother who went to jail. But don't dodge the question. By the way, when you get into Israel advocacy, they teach you how to spot these kind of questions. Where the question is set up in such a way that demands an answer, but the only legitimate answer is that the question is an invalid question. But it's very difficult to say that without looking as though you're dodging the question. But sometimes that's the only answer. Come and ask me a better question. One second, I haven't got much time. I need to get through lots of stuff. So the Rambam basically deals with the question, but did he answer the question? That's not clear. By the way, you might say, well, it's very convenient for the Rambam that he kind of dodged the issue by saying, oh, you don't really understand God. But actually, it's quite consistent because all the way through the Rambam's philosophy and theology, he says one of the most fundamental, you know, systems of Jewish thought is that we don't understand anything positive about God. We only can express negative attributes of God. I don't know what God is, but I can tell you what he isn't. God is not finite. Okay, so we'll say he's infinite. That's not a statement about what God is. It's a statement of what God isn't. And he says that's the only thing we can ever say about God. He's not this and he's not this. He's not this and he's not this. And of course, he's not he. But we say he, but he's not really he. We just don't have a neuter, etc. And he gives a marshal in the Moreh Nevuchim of someone. Let's do a game. Let me try and describe something to you just by telling you what it's not. And I'm trying to describe to you a boat. And I'm saying, well, it's not round, and it's not square, and it's not very long, it's not very short. And I just tell you, if I tell you enough things about what it's not, eventually you'll get a kind of view. Well, it must be something like this, okay? And therefore, it's not just convenient for the Rambam. He really holds this. We don't know anything about what God actually is, and therefore we don't know what God actually knows. Fine, that's one way of answering that question, or dealing with the question. By the way, just to complicate matters, go to page 4, please. The Rambam also says something which is going to cause us some sleepless nights, where he says earlier on in Yesod HaTorah, number 10, Nitzeta Omer, you need to understand the following about God. Hu HaYodea, V'hu HaYadua, V'hu HaDea Atzma. This is also in Moreh Nevuchim, but it's also in the Mishnah Torah, which is meant to be for everybody to learn. Maybe also the Moreh Nevuchim is meant for everybody, but this for sure. God is the knower, God is the knowledge, and God is the act of knowing. Hakol Echad, it's all one. V'dalza ein koich bepela amro, you don't really have the ability to express that. V'lo ba'ozin lishamoy, and you don't really have the mind to take it in. V'loy b'leiv adam lahakir, you can't really get it clear, albaria in a clear way. Lefikach, he says, einu makeh habruim v'yodin machmat habruim. God doesn't know anything in this room because of what's going on in this room. K'mo she'anu yodim osam, like I know you. You're in this room, I'm in this room, I know you because you're in this room. Ela machmas atzmo yodam. God knows everything because God knows God. The fikach mipnishe hu yodea atzmo, because God knows himself. Yada hakal, God knows everything. She'akol nismach be'ahava yasala, because everything really is dependent on, subsumed within maybe, God. Now that if that doesn't give you sleepless nights, it should. Because then you have to ask, well, what does that mean even? God knows everything because God knows himself and everything really is God? Is this some kind of panentheistic, you know, reality? Is really everything God? Are we now drifting effortlessly into Chassidus from the Rambam? Or even Lo Aleinu into Spinoza from the Rambam? I mean, that's, you can think about that. But this is in Mishnah Torah. This is not some deep esoteric text that I've just released to you. It's standing on a shelf right there. So what God's knowledge is not at all clear to us, and never can be. Okay, fine. Next, the Ravid. The Ravid, who is known to us as a commentator on the Rambam, he comes along and says, you know something? I'm not happy with that answer. And look at what he says. The Ravid, Rav Avram ben David, living in Marseille, number 11. He says, Amar Avram, in the Rashi script in number 11, Loi na'agzeh machadah minak ha'chachamim. This writer, talking about the Rambam, did not write the way an intelligent person should write. She'ein adam matchil b'davar v'lo yadal hashlima. You can't start something unless you know how to finish it. V'hu heichel b'shailas kushi. He asks these really difficult questions. V'inich adavar b'kushi. And he leaves you with questions. V'etzilu le'emun. And he tells you to trust him. V'toiv hayalo lahaniach adavar b'tzmimas ha'tzmimim. He should have left it to the tzmimas ha'tzmimim. Lots of people, he said, are tamim. They're simple people. They don't have all these deep kashas, all these philosophical existential questions. They never even thought of this. Now, Shkoyach, you've just put this question into people's heads, told them it's a really good question, there is no answer that they're going to be happy with, and trust him and move on. You're leaving people shattered. This is what's going to be. V'ulai sha'achas. Sorry, I missed out a little bit. Yeah, we should have left it to the team of Tzimim. Don't get people all wound up and leave them with doubts. But they'll start to have doubts about everything. All these rabbis, they don't really know anything. They don't really answer to anything. He's just let the can out of the bag. And on a certain level, the Ravid's right. Why should I go to all of the like ninth grade high schools all around the world and say, these are 15 unbelievably bombshell questions you never thought about Torah, God, and Judaism, which will leave you not sleeping at night. I go, what did I achieve by that? I'm going to go teach postdoctorate mathematics to third grade kids and say, see how clever maths is? They're just going to just cry and lie on the floor and say, I never want to look at anything else again. So says the Ravid, and the Ravid, by the way, might agree with the Rambam's answer about free will and determinism and omniscience. He might agree that the answer is you don't know what God's thoughts are. Shkoyach, but you can't say that to people. It's just not educationally savvy. And by the way, this is a very interesting question on education. Do you give people more questions than they can deal with and leave them with questions but leave them thinking, whoa, this is amazing? Or do you try and dumb it down a little bit and let people be happy? Is my goal as an educator to make you happy? I don't think so, actually. But part of my goal is, like I heard from Rav Hirschfeld, one of my colleagues, Rosh Yeshiva, many years ago. He said, it's like the shofar on Rosh Hashanah. I've said this before, and I'm not going to spend too much time because I have a lot to do. The shofar on Rosh Hashanah is tekiya, trua, tekiya. Trua is trua, shvarim as well, different kinds of brokenness. Tekiya is fixed. It's solid. Takua, it's fixed. Which means you always go into everything with a sense of certainty, of knowledge. Yeah, I know. I know what's going on. The reason you know is because you don't know what you don't know. The happiest people of the world in the world are the people who know Gornish. What's there to know? It's all, you're making it too complicated. Then what do? Truer. I break it all up. Smash it all to pieces. Raise thousands of questions until you're completely shattered. But then you have to have a takia at the end. You have to always have a takia after the truer. It's the simplicity of the other side of the complexity. Meaning we're going to glue it back together again, but now it's stronger for having been broken apart. It's a little bit like going to the gym. Somebody says to you, you know something, you should go to the gym, get yourself in shape. I don't need to go to the gym. I feel great. Look, I feel my arms work, my legs work. What do I need to go to the gym? No, go to the gym. So you go to the gym. And a week after working out, you can't walk. Your arms and legs are jelly. And you're saying, like, what was all that about? Before I went to the gym, I felt great. Now I'm shattered. He says, no, you've just done truer. You've ripped all your muscles to pieces. You wait. In a couple of weeks, you're going to feel like Iron Man. It's going to be unbelievable. That's the takia after the truer, but then you've got to do it again. And of course, the next time the truer has to be harder. I can't lift 3 kilos when I can lift 3 kilos. I've got to lift 4 kilos, and then 6 kilos, and then 8 kilos. You know, you always have to do that. So the rival said, look, I agree with your answer, potentially, but I don't like the way you've done it. And what does he give them? He gives them a very interesting thing. Let's just read a couple of lines from this. So he says, I'm going to do some damage limitation. The FLP, third line, she'ein shuva nitzechet hazeh, even though I don't have another answer which is really a better answer. Toiv hu lismod lo kesas shuva. Listen to this partial answer. Imayat sidkas ha'adam v'rishasa tzluim b'gzeres ha'barei. If God indeed decreed what we would do, ha'inu oimim she'ed yizayasa hu gzeresa. We would say that God's knowledge is a decree. V'haytalanu ha'asher ha'kasha ma'od. And it would indeed be difficult. God is decreeing. God is saying, I have to do this. But no, he said, God has retreated. The Rivet is, of course, a Kabbalist. And he says, God has pulled back from this knowledge. And he's given it over to you. So God is not actually telling you what to do. It's like the astrologers. They know all of the factors and they would predict. Now don't forget, the Rambam would never have given an answer about the astrologers because he thought astrology was complete nonsense. But the Rivet is more into respecting certain aspects of astrology. So he says, look, it's like this. It's what you might call the cabbage chocolate conundrum. Okay? Which is what? I've got a 2-year-old child, a 1.5-year-old child. And I say, try this cabbage, it's yum. Yummy cabbage. And they lick the cabbage, and then I try this horrible chocolate. And I give them chocolate, and they lick the chocolate. And now, I'm going to do some predictions. If I offer this child, this toddler, cabbage or chocolate, which is it going to choose? And you can predict, 999 times out of 1,000, chocolate every time. Oh, what are you, some kind of omniscient being? Did you remove that child's freedom of choice? No. But you know kids, and you know chocolate, and you know cabbage. And therefore, you can predict pretty much every single time what's going to be. He says, now take that and apply it to the infinite God. God knows your nurture, your nature, your genes, what he calls the astrology, all of the different factors, your Yetzirah. If God knows all of the factors to the infinite degree, then of course God knows what you're going to do. God didn't make you do it, but he just knows everything so well that he couldn't possibly get it wrong. That's my answer, he says. Actually, when I teach that to people, people like that. You say, yeah, that makes sense. I had a choice, and God knew because God just knows all of the factors, and therefore God knew what I was going to do. But the last four words kill it. And then he says at the end, for kol ze einenu shava, but this whole answer I've just given you is worthless. It's worthless. He probably hopes you won't get to the end. Okay? Why is it worthless? It's worthless because it doesn't really address the problem. Which is that even if you say there's no causation here, there's still a logical determinism. How could I have ever done anything different? I still could never have done other than what God knew would have to be done. Am I not in some way still held in by this pre-knowledge? And therefore, the Rivet doesn't like it. He doesn't present his answer as an alternative. He just wants to do damage limitation, leave you happier, get you off the floor so you'll come back to a shir next week. Okay. Even the Rambam, meaning, does he deal with it really? He says, you don't understand God's knowledge. Okay, so where does that leave me? You know, what do I understand? Anything? You have to understand something about God to be a religiously committed person. So that's an interesting question. Okay, fine. I wanted to spend the most time on those, but I've got 5, 6 more minutes, 7 more minutes. So I want to take you through two or three quick other answers. Rav Sadia Gaon has an answer which is so straightforward that it's too straightforward. Rav Sadia Gaon says, listen, why are you getting all, it's not just his answer, many other people give this type of answer, you can maybe even fit it into the Rambam's answer. He says, listen, the mistake you're making here is that you think that God knew it and that's why you did it. I said, but you got the wrong way around. You decided to do it, but because God is not bound by time, he knew already what you would decide to do. Poshet. So you had the free choice, but because God sees the future, he knew what that choice was going to be. It's like, it feels too easy, you know? And that, the Tosafos Yontzev brings this down basically on the Rambam itself. Some people say this is what the Rambam meant when they said God knows everything in a way which is different to you. It means God has, everything is one long present. A moshul that's sometimes given, it's like somebody sees people walking on a road, someone standing on a cliff looking down, they can see all the people, past and future, which are on that road. And therefore, God just sees in this way, and you can't do this, and we can't do this. And if we say, you know, Olam Haba, we think of it as a place we're going to, hopefully after quite a long time. But it's not true, we're already there. All our great, 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 great grandchildren who haven't been born yet have already died, and they're already there, and they're all waiting for us, but they're not waiting for us because we're already there, etc. After a while, you just give up and say, oh, I just need a cup of tea, and that's it. How much time can you... But it's true. Knowledge without time, and time is a physical thing. Time is not a spiritual thing. Time we can, you know, in Einstein, time is relative to space, etc., etc. And therefore, he says, maybe that's the answer. Then Rav Sadia Gaon and others give that answer, and in many ways, that's a very satisfactory answer. But if you get into the weeds, it doesn't actually necessarily answer the question fully. I want to give you two other quite controversial approaches, which I think you'll find a little bit unusual. So unusual that they're often not even taught. Or if they are taught, people try and kind of squeeze them into a more hashkafically acceptable kind of mold. And it's a good question as to what the Rambam would have thought of either of these two. He didn't know about them because they lived after him. But they were both thinkers from the Sephardi world. First of all, the Ralbag. The Ralbag says as follows, Gersonides. He says, listen, you've got the wrong end of the stick here. God knows everything that is knowable. Everything. But there are certain things which are just not knowable, which are all the specifics. Meaning, God knows all of the contingencies and all of the general things, because knowledge is an abstract thing. But specifics, says the Ralbag, are not something that you know. You see them, you sense them, and from all of those specifics, I'm looking at you, I see eyes and an ears, and I build up in my mind a piece of an abstract knowledge. That's the real knowledge. All of the details that form that abstract knowledge are just specific things that I sense with my physical organs. And God doesn't think that way. God is completely abstract. And therefore, look at what he writes, number 13. In claiming that God doesn't know particulars, no imperfection in him results, only perfection. For his knowledge concerns superior things, not these trivial things. And again, you have to understand the Ralbag is an Aristotelian. His definition of knowledge is something which is general. The specifics are not called knowledge. So when you say God doesn't know them, it's not that God is imperfect. God doesn't know what is not knowable. It's not called knowledge. It's called something else. It's like saying, does God, walk down the road? Oh, what a ridiculous question. Well, it's the same thing. Does God see particulars or no particulars? It's also a ridiculous thing. Now, we can't think this way because we're not used to thinking of knowledge in that Aristotelian way. But for the Ralbag, it makes perfect sense. Also, and someone had put this into Rashi, maybe you can only know what's knowable. Meaning, maybe your choice is not knowable because it hasn't been made yet, and therefore God can't know what is not knowable. So you're going to turn around and say, well, no, that's ridiculous. Of course, God's not bound by logic. Can God make a table which is not a table? So you're going to say yes or you're going to say no? So if you say no, because that's just illogical. Yeah, same kind of things. Exactly, classic things. So if you're going to say, yeah, but God is beyond logic. God can create a table which is not a table. That's very nice, but what does that even say? What do I even mean by that? I don't understand what that even means. So the Ralbag is a position. It was rejected by many, many, many. Even his own students. They felt he was an Aristotelian too far. But that's his position. And actually some of the more yeshivish kind of sforum that ever bring the Ralbag, they kind of try and force him into a Kabbalistic place, which I don't think is the right place. Let's just look for a second Rav Kreskes, Rav Chizkai Kreskes. And again, I'm not pretending to give you the whole story here. But Rav Chizkai Kreskes was a student of the Ran, Rabbeinu Nissim in Spain, and was also a Rebbe of Rav Yosef Alba, the Sefer Ikrim. And he was the other extreme. He was a full-fledged determinist. He said, you know something? God knows everything, and you don't really have any free choice. All of your actions are determined. Ah, what's the purpose of mitzvahs? Because when people do mitzvahs, they just change the parameters, which make it more likely that you'll do this rather than this, but it's still determined. You didn't choose in that sense. You've just changed the parameters. And therefore, he says, and I brought you a certain, a little extract there, or a certain summary, and he says, look, you know, really, reward and punishment, I know what you think they are. Reward and punishment are just consequences of things that you think you're choosing. It's like saying the reward for going on a diet is that you lose weight. No, going on a diet, you lose weight. It's a consequence rather than a reward. And therefore, he says, ultimately, you're more of a determinist. I brought you three or four lines from Professor Daniel Reinhold, who's a good friend of mine, who also wrote a wonderful book, An Introduction to Medieval Jewish Philosophy. He says, number 15, in the final analysis, then, we seem to be faced with a stark choice, according to Gersonides and Kreskes. The former allows us to hold on to human freedom at the expense of traditional understandings of divine omniscience. The latter allows us the traditional view of divine omniscience, but has ultimately done away with human freedom. Rabbi Akiva's statement that everything is foreseen but free choice is granted suddenly seems rather less secure. One or other of the clauses might be true, but neither Kreskes nor Gersonides manages to hold on to them both unequivocally. So I wanted to bring you those other ideas. So there are compatibilist approaches, the Rambam. Yes, you have free choice, and yes, God knows everything, and somehow they fit together. And then there are those that go more down the route, well, God doesn't know what is not knowable, and that's not an imperfection in God. Or you don't really have free choice at all, and that shouldn't keep you up late at night as well, because for all intents and purposes, there is reward and punishment in the way that he explains it. I just brought you at the very end, and I'm not going to give a whole share on it, but once you get into the world of Hasidus, then everything suddenly morphs into a different picture. And for Rav Tzadok HaKohen and Rav Kook, the reality is that yes, on the world that you perceive and I perceive, we have free will, but on a much higher level of reality, the world of Atzilus or higher level worlds, everything really is God. And the ultimate tshuva is the recognition that everything, including all the Averas that you ever did, is really God on a certain level. And that itself will bring you to this depth of connection with God, which will actually enable you to do tshuva mi'ahava. And again, I did not do that justice in 10 seconds. But I very strongly suggest you read Rav Kook. It's in Orot HaTshuva in chapter 16, in Tzidkas HaTzadik in section 40. But there is a whole Hasidic approach to this. So just to summarize, what have we done today? We've started a conversation. We're going to be talking about Tzadik V'Ra'alam. And one of the questions is, well, do we really have free will or do we not have free will? And the Rambam says this is central to Hilchos Tshuva, to the Avoda of today. And the answer is yes, we have free will, at least according to the Rambam. But on a certain level, everything is foreseen. We will have to, by the way, deal with this question of free will in a more difficult way, which is, does free will on a certain level explain the existence of evil? Meaning, when we ask, how could God let this happen, is the answer, well, God didn't let this happen. People make choices. And when people make bad choices, terrible suffering happens. And that's called free will. We're going to have to deal with that question, whether it holds up. But we'll get there. We've just made a start. It's a foundation. Next week, we'll come back. Please, God, please come back next week, next Wednesday. Come for the whole morning. Enjoy all the shiurim. And please, God, I'll see you then.